Thanks for tuning in to the Illuminations Podcast. We love having you here. It is our mission to be a beacon of light on your journey towards conscious and mindful living. In our weekly episode, we bring you inspiring change makers in the field of spirituality, healing, personal growth, and wellness who share their insight and expertise so you can navigate your way to a happier, healthier, and more purposeful life.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Illuminations World Podcast. I'm your host, Nia Roy, and I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, yoga teacher, and sound therapist here at Illuminations. Welcome back to another episode. We have a very special guest today, but before that, I would like to thank each and every single one of you for tuning in and listening to learn, to grow, and to live light. So the topic of today is all about the attachment theory. And to enlighten us about this attachment theory, I have a very special guest with me. His name is Kareem Noor. Kareem is an active therapist who has completed trainings in hypnotherapy and other modalities like psychodynamics and positive psychology. He has accumulated over 600 clinical training hours certified by the KHDA and IMDHA. Kareem has featured articles in My Wellbeing NYC. He works with adolescents and adults from different genders and sexualities. Some of the areas he specializes in are extreme emotions, life transitions, attachments, indecisiveness, relationship issues, anger, and anxiety. So welcome to the show, Kareem. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Nia.
How are you?
Good, how are you today?
Very well. So attachment theory, can you enlighten us about attachment theory? What exactly is it?
All right. So attachment theory has become very influential in the field of psychodynamic therapy and psychotherapy. And it has been pioneered by a psychoanalyst who was in Britain named John Bowlby in the 1960s, specifically 1969. So John Bowlby had argued that as humans, we are similar to animals. We need some attachments that are formed throughout our lives to be able to function normally. And these attachments obviously are formed throughout our childhood with our caregivers or our parents or whoever was there during that time. So that developmental age is usually between 0 to 3. This is the most critical age, according to him. Mm. This is where the time when you build that relationship with your caregiver or a parent. And so during that time, he talked about something called internal working model. This model is built or shaped during your interaction with that caregiver.
Okay.
So basically, what is it, an internal working model? It is, I like to call it like a blueprint, mm-hmm. where you learn how to interact to other people. And it's like your blueprint, how you form relationships with others, okay. and other people in your life later on. It's very similar to Object Relations by Melanie Klein, another psychoanalyst. So it talks about internalizing your relationships with these caregivers inside you, and then you act from there throughout that pattern with others.
Give us an example? So why is this relevant, and how does that play out in our adult lives, if you can just give us an example?
All right, so for example, one of the studies that Bowlby did with his colleagues in the 1960s, he observed that children who experienced separations from their family, for example, like hospitalization or war, like these kind of cases, these children suffered from a lot of, first, they suffered with a lot of anger and distress. Mm. And then later on, they were sad, they were depressed. And then they were just normal. And they were actually, this normality was just a mask to mask the unwillingness for them to share their affection with others. So when their parents came back, they were very, they were met with rejection and they were met with avoidance. So later on, these kids, when they grow up as adolescents, they either cling to relationships because they had a fear of abandonment internalized inside of them, or they actually just push that relationships away because they have a fear of abandonment or rejection and they were in turn avoidant. So that was their behavior. It affects definitely adulthood. But as we say, so if the child uses their mother or their father or grandparent or whoever was there as a secure base to form that internal working model and work with that base to explore other relationships, it will be healthy. If the relationship is positive, it will be positive. If it's negative, then it will affect the future relationship.
And this only develops between the age 0 to 3.
That's mainly when it is formed. Okay. But as we say in psychology, everything is... This is not like deterministic. So that attachment style is not deterministic. It's malleable.
Okay.
It's changeable. It's not set in stone. It can change. But this is the correlational studies has been shown that longitudinal from childhood to adolescence, it continues the same unless there's some intervention that has been done, like psychotherapeutic intervention, or if they were with a secure partner. So, for example, let's say if a child is secure and they grow up and they had like a traumatic experience with a relationship or an adult, they would be insecure. And we'll discuss these types later. And the other way around. So if someone is insecure growing up because they had a traumatic environment and then now they grow up and they had a secure relationship, they will be secure. So it's malleable. It's changeable.
Okay.
It's not a life sentence.
So how many different, so could you elaborate a little bit more about the different styles or the different kinds of attachments that people form?
Yes. So obviously during that time from 0 to 3, the children are very not developed cognitively yet to understand what that experience was. So they don't understand what does that separation experience was if they had experienced that. So... another colleague of Bowlby called Mary Ainsworth in the 1979, she developed an experiment. It's a laboratory experiment which systematically observes mothers and children in a room. They set up a room in a lab with toys and two chairs, and it had a mirror behind her that's double mirror. So the psychologist would sit behind and the observers behind it. They observe children with their mothers, how they interact, especially measuring and coding. Mother leaves twice the room, comes back on reunion, and a stranger there.
So I've heard of this, yeah.
Yes, it's very popular. It's called the strange situation. So basically, they'll bring a child between that age, 0 to 18 months old, and they will bring her with the mother, see how they react. Basically, what they found, four different types. First, so they bring a child, and then this child, who is secure, as they termed it, who first... they are very comfortable with the surrounding. They use their mother as a secure base. They would explore the toys in the room. They're not that wary of the stranger who was there. When their mother leaves, they would become very distressed. They would call her name. They would go after her, crawling in the door. And then when she comes back at the reunion, they're very happy and they continue to play again. That's the secure. And then there's insecure. And insecure, there are three types of insecure. The first type is insecure... resistant or ambivalent. They're both the same names, just synonyms. So insecure, resistant, basically, as soon as they enter the room with their mother, they're very clingy. They don't want to explore the environment. They may be next to her, next to the chair. They take some time to warm up and to explore. That's the secure base for them. When their mother leaves, they're very, very distressed. They're very angry. They cry. They throw almost a tantrum. Stranger tries to calm them down, nothing. Mother comes back, they're still distressed. Actually, they show this ambivalence. So they try to push and pull at the same time. They hug her, at the same time also they push her. They cry, also they hug her. But they cannot be calmed down as easily as the secure because they have this ambivalence. And then it takes them time to get familiar again with the toys and play again. So that's the insecure ambivalent. The other type is called insecure avoidant. So the insecure avoidant is also very interesting because as soon as they come into the room, they're very not bothered. They don't interact with the mother. They are on their own, very independent, they look like, and they play with the toys. Stranger comes, they're not bothered. Mother leaves, they're still fine. They don't show any signs. they don't cry. Mother comes the same, they're not bothered at all. And then when they come, when they actually measure that child physiological symptoms, like the heart rate, the breathing rate, the cortisol levels, he's actually, or she's actually, that child is very distressed, but they're not showing it physically. They're very avoidant, very disconnected from their body and their emotions. They don't show it, but they're definitely distressed. So this is another type of insecure, insecure avoidant, that's what they call. And then the last type is disorganized, which was a new type that was added that didn't fit all these types. Mm. And this is a very different type because usually, I mean, definitely need a whole new episode for that. But in a nutshell, they're very distressed. They're all often frozen children. Mm. They hide behind the table, behind the door. They act very different, get angry, and they bite their mother, for example. They usually come from very abusive families, especially with alcohol and drug abuse. So it's a very different type of attachment.
So you, just to summarize, you have the insecure, resistant, the ambivalent, the avoidant, the disorganized. And is there one more?
So it's four. Yes.
It's the four. Secure, it's just a four.
Secure and three types of insecure.
Right. So the secure and the three types of insecure. Infants, yes. So these are the qualities that you can observe in children.
Yes.
So how does this now translate to adults? Or do they have different kinds of attachment styles,
let's say? Yes, so obviously psychologists couldn't use this same method to measure attachment style for adults because this is only for kids. So another psychologist called Mary Main with Solomon, after that in 1999, they developed interviews called AAI, which we use actually in clinical sessions. It's called Adult Attachment Interview. This takes almost like 1 hour, so it takes the whole session. If someone comes to me, I'll be doing this for 1 hour. But this also, they found out the same categories. They just have different names. So they have secure, autonomous, means independent, same.
Mm-hmm.
And they found the preoccupied, which is the insecure, anxious, or insecure, ambivalent, the same. And they found the dismissive, which is the insecure, avoidant. And then the unresolved, which is disorganized. So exactly same categories, just different names and more or less the same behavior in adults is a bit different.
So secure, preoccupied, dismissive, and disorganized.
Yes.
Okay.
So four of them as well. And there was another psychologist called Hazen. He collaborated with another one called Shaver. In the same time, they developed a questionnaire called the Love Quiz just to measure the attachment style of these adults within the context of a romantic
relationship. Oh, that's interesting.
Just to know how it affects that. And they did a longitudinal study to measure those children. Do they continue to have the same one when they grow up or is it different?
Mm.
They found the same criteria, but there was something very interesting. And we all know like these, because their tool was a self-reported questionnaire. So it's not an interview like Mary Main. It's a 14 items questionnaire and it's self-reported, so you have to fill it up. And we all know, like in psychology, we have this bias. Sometimes when someone fills the questionnaire, they have this self bias. You want to look more in a better light, more attractive. So the answers sometimes is skewed. They found that the people who reported that they are actually secure, they're not. They're actually avoidant. And here's why. Because avoidant attachment style, people who act, usually they don't want a relationship, they want to commit. They see independence as a desirable trait. They see this as is not like normal, which is actually not. It's actually an insecurity, it's avoidance. So they see this as a normal secure relationship. They don't need anyone. They can be good on their own. They don't need a partner, but it's actually an insecurity.
So just to understand what you're saying. So people who come across, or some people who come across as saying, I'm an independent woman, or I'm fine, I don't need a relationship, it doesn't necessarily mean they're secure. It can be a defense mechanism,
exactly,
which comes from being avoidant.
Yes, and this is a belief, sometimes it's unconscious belief, that they think this is the norm while it is actually avoidance. Because as adults, people with avoidance attachment style, they have a fear of engulfment. And their caretaker originally was very rejecting. So their self-image is very unworthy or not enough or not good enough. So they just push people away and they don't want to be engulfed by that kind of relationship. They're very disconnected from the body. They don't like to feel emotions. They push things away. So they're very prone to repression and denial, which are defense mechanisms by Anna Freud. So very, this is very common with them. So when they grow up, they would probably have psychosomatic disorders because they push things in their body and they don't feel their emotions. That's the avoidance. As opposed to the preoccupied or the anxious, they suffer from anxiety usually because they feel.
They feel
a lot and they want more. They cling more and they want more attention. Their caregiver was usually inconsistent and they have a very low view of themselves and high view of others. So they always want more. They always want to, you know, to run after someone. So this is the difference between them.
So I love how you mentioned that avoidance, people who are avoidant, they tend to have psychosomatic disorders because they aren't present in their body and they push things away and they tend to have disorders like depression, correct? Whereas preoccupied and disorganized attachment styles, they tend to have anxiety or things that are physically more present, would you say?
That's correct. Yeah, more or less.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you deal with clients, how do you categorize them in these attachment styles initially? How do you go about that?
So it's very good because it's implication of the attachment theory implication in clinical work as a therapist. It's very important because if someone informed about this, I would definitely, in the beginning, as usual, we explore the developmental period of any client, especially between these critical ages, between 0 to 3, and see how their attachment style or pattern is. Mm. And then that will give me a way that I can adapt to their attachment style and how to respond and how to do. Because as a therapist, I am an attachment figure, and this is a relationship. So if someone comes, for example, with an insecure attachment, whether avoidant or anxious, they would be expecting the therapist to be acting the same way as others in his life or her life. So if someone is anxious, they would expect others' therapists would be cold, unavailable, away. They'll probably terminate this relationship early on. But if I detect this early on, I can actually change it and give a different outcome out actually there, supportive, and change that internal working model to make it healthier. And as a result, they would have healthier relationship outside the therapeutic relationship.
Wow.
So as opposed to if another therapist maybe is not informed about that, they might terminate that relationship early on. And then the client would be like, oh, all people in my life leave me, even the therapist.
Wow.
This will confirm their beliefs if they're especially insecure. And it will affect their relationships.
This makes so much sense. And it just shows how important it is, even in romantic relationships, to even know what your attachment style is like and what your partner's attachment style is like. Because I imagine this is where a lot of the communication issues or conflicts and fights revolve around. It's basically your needs not being met. And there's just a difference in attachment styles, correct?
Definitely. Because especially from a perspective of insecure, whether avoidant or anxious, That's how it is. It's a type of insecurity. But when we talk about secure, what defines a secure anyway? It's a vulnerability to be present and to be able to express emotions, to be able to take, receive demands or emotions, to be able to have space, to be able to regulate, to be able to regulate your affects, to be able to self-regulate. This is predicted nicely with the studies done in childhood when the children are securely attached. Mm. They're able to be vulnerable.
Wow.
As an adult, they can have successful relationships.
I love that you mentioned that because I feel like a lot of people, and maybe I may be generalizing, but when we talk about men in general, a lot of people equate vulnerability to weakness.
Mm.
But it's actually the opposite. It's when as a child you feel secure enough to express your emotions, your thoughts and feelings, that just shows how secure they feel within their family environment. Therefore, the belief systems and the conclusions that they make about themselves are determined by those experiences, and that then translates when they are older, correct?
Definitely. It has an effect.
So as an adult or listeners who are listening to this, so I'm sure they probably know who they are in terms of preoccupied, disorganized, or avoidant, and so on. Can you take us through each one of them and give us a few tips or recommendations if you are an avoidant, what you could improve on or how you could do things a little bit differently, or perhaps how could you maybe interact with someone who's avoiding? Can you take us through each one of them?
Of course. So in adults, it's different. As we said, it's measured through these types, the AAI or the questionnaire. So once someone knows their attachment style, as I said, it's malleable. Mm-hmm. It's not deterministic. Mm-hmm. It's probabilistic. Like anything in psychology, it can be changed.
Yeah.
So, for example, if someone was secure as a child and then they had a trauma in their adolescence, they will definitely have a change or attachment trauma.
Yeah.
They will change. And the other way around. So if someone, let's say, is secure, this is obviously the best thing, is 70% of population are secure when they did this longitudinal study.
Okay.
So secure, they're able to, as I said, to be vulnerable, to be able to respond and to be able to give space. And it's not only characteristics of the child, it's also based on the parent. So the parent has to be available, has to be responsive, and has to be sensitive. Mm. And available doesn't mean physically available. Someone can be physically available, they're not available emotionally, they're not available cognitively, or you know, there's no synchronicity.
That's so powerful what you just said. Can you just repeat that one more time? So yes. As parents, how do they need to be, or how should they parent a child so that they can raise secure children, let's say?
So the important period, the critical age, is from 0 to 3.
Yeah.
I had some observational looks at children here, especially here in Dubai. You know these fountains were next to the mall outside in the summer where kids go and play there. So there was this, I saw this father with an almost 18-month-old kid, and he brought her, she was wearing shorts, all the kids are playing in the fountain with water, running around. As soon as she arrived, the first reaction was, I noticed, was withdrawal. She was back behind the bench, doesn't want to go there, she was a bit scared, too much noise, too many people. The father was okay, he let her there. Little by little, she warmed up and she went to play with the kids and she was having a good time. He was very sensitive to her needs. He gave her time. He understood what she's feeling and just let her be. Has the father acted otherwise? Has maybe pushed her? He was like, oh, I brought you here. I changed your clothes. We're here now. Why don't you go? I kept pushing her. Disregarding her emotions, she would have been definitely insecure. She wouldn't have this agency to self-regulate her affects when she grows up, and it would have been a bad experience for everyone. So he was sensitive. He was available to her needs, emotional needs, and he was responsive in that way that he gave her space.
So what would you say to parents who are probably thinking, well, I'm trying to do the best for my child, or they probably regret it when they're older, so they should be pushed into things. What would you say to parents who would say that?
During that age?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, try as much as you can to be responsive, available, and try to let the child be their own other than what you want them to be. And even if, obviously, we all do have shortfalls and not everyone has the perfect childhood, but it's also the way we perceive our childhood, and it's malleable. When they grow up, it can still change.
Mm-hmm.
It's not set in stone. So this still can be a chance afterwards.
So being sensitive, allowing the child to be vulnerable. So what about in relationships? Let's say if you observe a partner who is avoidant or preoccupied or disorganized, how should you interact with your partner who are one of these?
Okay, so for example, usually people who are avoidant, they have a very special characteristic trait that they have a fear of engulfment, basically.
Okay.
They have fear of commitment. They don't want to be close to people because they have a fear of rejection or have a fear of like being in that relationship and getting disappointed again. So maybe give them space. Maybe try to acknowledge that what they're actually feeling and just give that space. In my opinion, the avoidant type is the most difficult to deal with. But if an avoidant and a secure partner became together, the avoidant has a probability to be secure as well.
Wow, okay.
Anyone who become with a secure partner, they have the probability to become secure again. It can work, but two avoidants, I feel like it's very difficult. avoidant and maybe insecure, ambivalent, it's very, very difficult. Insecure and insecure, both of them are anxious. It can work, but it's difficult. So, for example, the preoccupied or the anxious, it's the same term, they usually suffer from something Bowlby writes about in his book in 1920. It's called failure to mourn.
So what failure to mourn.
Yes. So what is that? It is the failure to actually mourn a suffering that they have experienced. So they carry it with them. It's a failed processing or self-regulating or emotional regulation. So they carry that trauma, whatever it was, with them. And then they identify with it to the point that they build an armor around that trauma. And they don't want to enter and they don't want anyone to work with them through it. They identify with it. And this is one of the preoccupied attachment style characteristics. So that's why they become very needy and clingy, because they have the trauma still in them, unprocessed.
And it's part of their identity.
Part of their identity. And as opposed to a secure person, they learn how to modulate that trauma into their limbic system and learn that new ability to self-regulate their affects and their capacity. Have they worked with the parent? Not necessarily. The parent can be maybe not physically there, maybe passed away. Maybe some people don't have the ability to forgive.
Yeah.
But what they worked on and what they can work on is their ability to modulate and to be vulnerable, to have that capacity to experience the emotion and accept others' emotions as well.
Wow.
This is the way how they can overcome that insecurity and be secure, basically.
So what I'm hearing is, regardless what your attachment style is, anybody can become secure, provided they choose to work on regulating, modulating their emotions and accepting.
Definitely.
And acknowledging what they're feeling. So what would you say are the best ways a person could learn how to do that?
So obviously one of the first things is to be with a secure partner. If not, then there has to be an intervention, psychotherapy or a therapy with someone who's attachment informed. This definitely can change the attachment style. If these two are not accessible, it's always good to practice acknowledging your emotions or knowing what you feel and actually give that space to yourself to be able to know what you're actually experiencing, other than pushing your emotion down or suppressing it using these defense mechanisms. So it's important to actually acknowledge it. And there's something called mentalizing or mentalization therapy. It's also used for borderline personality disorders.
Okay.
Who are usually also disorganized originally in their childhood. So mentalizing is the ability to see yourself outside of yourself in others' shoes, to be able to know why this person is acting this way and understand it, other than just being in yourself and saying, oh, this person didn't reply to my text or didn't see me today. That means I'm rejected or I'm not enough. Secure person would put themselves in others' shoes and see, maybe this person is busy, maybe there's something going on. They would give space and they would understand. But someone who's insecure, they don't have that ability to mentalize.
Mm. So would you say that inability to mentalize is coming from a place where you don't want to acknowledge your downfall or the shortcoming per se? And is that why a secure person can put themselves in another shoe and therefore see the reality of the situation, regardless what it is?
Yeah, it's part of emotional regulation. It's not only about what they're feeling now, they also have to see the whole picture and to remove themselves and see the whole situation around. And this is how you regulate your affects generally. This is one way to change it, but not all attachment styles, they have this weakness. But definitely, I would say, because there are a lot of studies that has been done, correlational studies, for example, on avoidant types. They found out that usually people who are avoidant, they have a higher degree of bullying in their adolescence in school. They would be bullies because they have internalized anger and they just push it out. Yeah, so they become bullies. This is a lot of studies has shown that as opposed to people who are preoccupied or anxious attachment style, they'll probably be mostly victims of that. Secure, they don't have secure. They have actually positive correlations with being successful in the work field, they're popular with peers, they have successful relationships, better health, really good outcomes. This organized, which was the fourth one, the correlations is usually psychopathologies and personality disorders if it hasn't been dealt with in childhood.
Wow.
For example, borderline personality or things similar to that. So it's very difficult because they become really dysregulated.
Mm. Yeah. So thank you so much, Kareem, for coming here today and sharing all this great knowledge with us. But before you leave, what would be your top three tips or top three insights for our viewers before you leave?
Regarding attachment.
Or just in general, in terms of self-regulation, in terms of mental health, what would your top three tips be?
Yes, so the usual self-help advice is usually to be present, mm-hmm. whether you're practicing mindfulness-based techniques, meditations, journaling, body work like yoga. It's very good to be in touch with your physical body and what it is telling you, especially if you're prone to storing these emotions in your body.
Because your body never lies.
Yeah, exactly. Your body's always here. Your mind goes here and there, but your body's always present. So you can always get that from your body.
Yeah.
Journaling also, if you are into sports, is really good because it stimulates the both hemispheres of the brain. So, for example, yoga, it stimulates both the right and left because you do synchronistic movements with breath, right?
Yeah.
And this stimulates the middle part of the brain. So it creates neurons.
Mm.
As a result, it creates dopamine. Yeah. And this really has a positive effect.
Wow. Thank you so much, Kareem. And where can people find you?
Thank you. Through my page, it's called My Sanctum, or through Illuminations, both.
So on Instagram, call My Sanctum.
That's correct.
Our?
I'll share my information as well in the description.
Perfect. Well, thank you to all the listeners for tuning in for another episode. We will catch you again with another speaker, with another topic. Until then, stay safe and live life.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love to have you tune in again next week as we discuss more engaging topics on relationships, health, career, self-care, and spirituality. If you'd like to help support this podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave us a rating and review. We'd be extremely grateful. To catch all the latest from us, you can also follow us on Instagram at Illuminations World or visit the Illuminations World YouTube channel for more inspiring content. See you again next week, and until then, live light.